Good evening to everyone. My name is Gabriela Michalek, and it's a great pleasure to invite all of you to an evening with Ada. So this is an event in honor of Ada Lovelace, a brilliant mathematician and pioneer of modern computing. This event was organized by Transregional Collaborative Research Center, Quantitative Methods for Visual Computing, the initiative Constance Women in Mathematics, and Equal Opportunity Office. It consists of three major parts. So first, we'll have the opportunity to listen to the talk of Sebastian Krapp, who will tell us a little bit more about the life and legacy of Ada. Later, we'll watch the short film Ada, the winner of several awards, for example, Grand Prize and the Best Short Film at the Short Film Competition 2021. And finally, we'll have a great opportunity to talk to the movie director, Steven Kammerer, and to the leading actress and co-writer, Julie Bruns. So this is the plan for today. So let's start. Sebastian, the floor is yours. Please tell us more about Ada.
All right. So thank you very much for the introduction and the invitation. I'll go straight into the presentation because 20 minutes is not nearly enough to talk about such an exciting person as Ada Lovelace. And just like in the spirit of Constance Women in Mathematics, I will not only concentrate on the life, but also on the academic achievements and scientific achievements of this extraordinary person of the 19th century. So let me start talking about the life of the Countess of Lovelace. She was actually born as Augusta Ada Byron on 10th December 1815 in London, and died also in London in 1852. So you see that she didn't have a long life, but she died as King Countess of Lovelace, which tells us that there was some development throughout her life. So let me start by introducing her parents. On the one hand, there was the father, George Gordon Byron, 6th Baron Byron. I always included the nobility titles so that you can see what kind of part of society Ada Lovelace came from, but you can see it because she was a countess. And just to say a few things about him, he was a poet, he was a free thinker, he was the father of three children, of three women, and Ada was his only legitimate child, which means the only child born in a legitimate marriage. And he didn't even meet Ada properly. So the parents got divorced right after, or shortly after, Ada's birth. And he died when Ada was 8 years old due to his lifestyle. And anyway, another interesting fact about him is that Ada, after all, decided to be buried next to him. So the connection to Ada's connection to her father is kind of a big mystery, but the connection to her mother was much stronger. So in comparison, because Anne Isabel Noel Byron, 11th Baroness Wentworth and Baroness Byron after marriage, was also a mathematician, which at that time meant that she had mathematical knowledge, but she couldn't really use it, but we come to that later. But because of Ada's father, she was for a strict upbringing and against the ideas of poetry, but more for the idea of mathematics and technology. So she was kind of a driving force. To emphasize the development of Ada also in early years, I do not want to read out the whole letter here. You can do that and you can read all of this in the lecture recording, but I want to drive your attention towards the middle part, where she talks about philology, prominent word in the middle. So when she was 12 years old, she wrote, "I think of writing a book of philology illustrated with plates if ever I really invent a method of flying. With respect to my present new idea on the subject, I have but one doubt about its complete success, but I'm inclined to think that overcoming the difficulty I speak of it, if it exists, depends only upon trick and rack, in which case continual and persevering practice alone would completely surmount it," and so on. So you see that she has a brilliant mind at an early age and a very, very strong tendency towards technology. And this carried on through her, well, contacts to the, let's say, academic and high society of London. So that you can imagine the setting, there were so-called soirees at that time, which meant there were evening dinners where prominent people at the time were invited, and they talked about all kinds of subjects, including scientific achievements of that, well, very pioneering time of technology. And among her contacts and mentors were William Friend, her first teacher in maths, Mary Fairfax Somerville. That's a very important contact because she was a female teacher, advisor, and friend in mathematics. Then Augustus De Morgan, all mathematicians here will know who he is, but he was also a philosopher. So he was a professor and supporter. Charles Wheatstone, a general inventor, and he inspired her in many things. And Michael Faraday, an experimental physicist known for many of his findings in physics, who refused to be a teacher, but they still stayed friends, and they stood in letter correspondence after all. But the most important person to her was Charles Babbage from a scientific view. He was an inventor, supporter, and a friend. So by training, he was a mathematician, philosopher, and mechanical engineer. And a very important development of his was the analytical engine, which he started in 1833. About the same time, he must have met Ada at age 17, and they continued working closely together. Just to emphasize what Babbage thought about Ada, there's a quote from a letter he wrote to Faraday: "That enchantress who has thrown her magical spell around the most abstract of sciences and has grasped it with a force that few masculine intellects, in our own country at least, could have exerted over it." So you can see that he had an extremely high opinion of Ada, and he even said that no man could reach her intellect. And Ada also said something very nice about Babbage's invention, namely, "We may say most aptly that the analytical engine weaves algebraical patterns just as the jacquard loom weaves flowers and leaves." So you can see that she was strongly inspired by this analytical engine, but I'll say more about that when I talk about her scientific achievements. Just to continue with her, let's say, middle part of her life, when she was 19, she got married to William King Noel, 8th Baron King, and later made 1st Earl of Lovelace when she also became a Countess of Lovelace. And the action he's known best for is that he became a Fellow of the Royal Society at the Scientific Society of London to support Ada, because at that time it was impossible for women to actually access libraries, to access universities. And only by support of her husband, she was able to get the books that sometimes he even went there to copy for her. From 1836 to 1839, the three children were born. And after 1839, after the birth of her third child, her second son, she continued with her mathematical studies. And most prominently in 1843, when she was 27 years old, she translated a script by some Italian mathematician and mechanical engineer, Luigi Menabrea, who later became prime minister of Italy, on Babbage's analytical engine. But she did not only translate it, but also added her own comments and notes A to G, which she's most famously known for, which exceeded the notes by, I think, 3 times the volume. And just to continue, just to finish the part on her life, there were tragedies in her later life. So she was, throughout her life, she was frequently sick and addicted to medicine. And it's in quotation marks because medicine at that time, we would now translate as very hard drugs. She had a gambling problem. And with some other women, she started a horse betting scheme, you would say. She lost a lot of money. £3,000 was a lot of money back then. And she had the idea that this problem could be solved mathematically, but after all, she did lose a lot of money. And also there were rumors about Ada, who was a very prominent person at that time, that she had extramarital relationships with men. And the press at that time, just like today, reported about these prominent people and about her shady sides with regard to that. And most tragically, she died at the age of 36. It is not known what the exact cause was, but it is most likely that it was uterine cancer. Okay, so this was the quick life of Ada Lovelace. And now, as I said, that in Constance Women Mathematics, we also want to focus a bit more on the actual work. And I'm extremely excited about this because I learned a lot about early computer science when I prepared for this. So here's the analytical engine, but it's only one part of it because the analytical engine was never really built, only parts of it. But nowadays, there's a project to actually build it the way that Babbage wanted it to be built. And let's have a closer look at what made Ada so famous. She wrote the first computer program. So there were many algorithms, so many schemes to solve problems in a very rigorous way back then. But what made it a first computer program? So the special thing about it is that it contained three ingredients, which are the linear order of commands. So she made a list of commands which were to be executed in the exact order. There was conditional branching. So she had something in there that said, if something happens, then do something else. And if something else happens, then do a third thing. And there were loops. So she said that if we are at a certain point, start again from somewhere else. And these three things actually constitute what we now call a modern, let's say, program. What makes a computer program is, of course, that it was written for a computer, namely the analytical engine. And it was there's some debate whether it was the first computer program, but it certainly was the first published computer program containing these three ingredients above. So what can we imagine the computer to look like? It was really just a mechanical machine. So Babbage Babbage designed it to be powered by a massive steam engine. And this really is just one very small computational part of it. So you can just imagine what it looks like. It was operated by these punch hole cards on the right. And these would make the algorithm. So inserting certain punch cards in a certain order would tell the machine what operations to perform. And to see, have a closer look at this famous node G of Ada Lovelace, let's have a look at what she actually wrote down there. And then we'll come to the mathematical content at last. So in the columns, she wrote down the commands, and the commands were kind of in a strict relation to the punch cards she wanted to use. So for example, if we look at the very first column, there's the number of lines, the number of commands. In the second column, you can see it very small. They're the operations to be performed. So a punch card would tell us would tell the machine whether it should do plus, minus, times, or division. Then there were the variables. So the variables is a very special thing at that time because, let me go back if you can see it. Yeah, it's here. The variables were represented by these small number wheels. So variables were just these wheels, we can imagine like them, and then variables took a certain number, which could change throughout the process of calculations. And so this whole computer program she wrote down there is very, very nicely readable. So I didn't understand what the analytical engine was like, but it is written in a very, very beautiful way that someone who knows something about computer science would easily understand. And to just emphasize, if some computer scientists are here, what one of her inventions were, or one of her ideas was that variables should have a counter. So if we have a variable v4 and we define it in a step to be v4 minus v1, we should count how many times we have changed it. And that's why we have this small 2 here. So this was kind of a groundbreaking idea, only which led towards actually being able to use variables in a specific way in these specific machines. And in the last 5 minutes, I would also like to talk a bit about the mathematics, because this is what Constance Women Mathematics is for, of Ada's ideas. And I did not say it at all so far. Ada's computer program was designed to compute Bernoulli numbers. These Bernoulli numbers, what are they? Let me give you a very brief introduction to what they're used for and where they came from. So let's imagine we want to sum up all numbers from 1 to 10. Then we could do that. We can also sum up the numbers from 1 to 100. That would be much much harder, but there are formulas where we can just plug in certain things and then easily compute them. And this would be one of the formulas. So instead of summing up the numbers 1 to 10, I can just calculate a half times 10 squared plus a half times 10, and this would give me 55. And don't worry if you do not understand these formulas. I just want to give you an idea where these numbers came from. So generally, if I sum up all numbers from 1 to n, there is this formula. So on the left-hand side, there's a very long sum. On the right-hand side, there's a short sum. And there I can just put in my number n, just as I put in 10 on the previous slide. But the same thing exists for squaring numbers. So if I want to add 1 squared, 2 squared, 3 squared, and so on, and also for cubing and taking to the fourth power, and so on. And generally, Bernoulli's formula tells us there's a general expression where if we sum up n such numbers, a difficult, a long sum, there's a less difficult. I know for non-mathematicians, the sum with a big sum symbol there looks more difficult maybe, but it is actually less difficult to plug in the numbers there and then calculate it directly. And the Bernoulli numbers are these numbers at the end. So the first Bernoulli number called B1 plus would be a half, the second would be a 1 over 6, the third one would be 0, which I added here because it has to be in front of the n, and the fourth one would be minus 1 over 30. And these Bernoulli numbers have very interesting applications in other parts of mathematics. So for example, trigonometric functions and hyperbolic functions can be expressed with these Bernoulli numbers. So these are very important numbers for the mathematics back then, I think also for today. And now what Ada did was she didn't take the normal Bernoulli numbers, she kind of just switched them. She shifted them by 1. So her first Bernoulli number would be 1 over 6 on the right column here. The second one would be 0. The third one would be minus 1 over 30. And there's no zeros Bernoulli number. And she now wanted to compute these Bernoulli numbers and write an algorithm for computing them. And OK, now really don't worry if you do not understand what's going on here. For the mathematicians, this is just the formula which we had earlier revised. So I just took the formula from before, and I wrote it down in a different way. But this way is actually the way that Ada used in her program. So what she did was, so the prominent equation up here, that's the important one. The important thing is that the Bernoulli number, number 2n minus 1, can be computed by taking all the previous ones and doing something with them. And these a's, this a0, a1, they are not that hard to compute. So let's say I want to calculate the Bernoulli number, number 20, then I can just take the first 19 Bernoulli numbers, do some easy arithmetic with them, and then I get the 20th one. So that's the whole idea behind it. And the derivation for the quick mathematicians is down here. And just to give you again the main ideas, because here we can really see, I just put down the formulas on this slide because you can really see how in her program these things are actually happening. What were her main ideas? Well, each Bernoulli number is just the weighted sum of the previous ones, which means that to compute a new Bernoulli number, I can just take all the Bernoulli numbers from the previous steps and then weight them, and I get the new one. And this is exactly what makes a computer program. So there are loops. There are things where I say, take the previous steps and then repeat. And the whole challenge there is to just do it with plus, minus, times, and divided, and do it in such an efficient way that I can write it down 22 lines. And this is the achievement of Ada Lovelace. So just to give you also an idea how this concept was perceived, not at that time, but even later, I want to show you what Alan Turing, the father of, let's say, modern computers, said about Lady Lovelace. So it's called here Lady Lovelace's Objection, one of his most groundbreaking works. So I just read out what Ada said. So Ada said that the analytical engine has no pretension whatever to originate anything. It can do whatever we know how to order to perform. It can follow analysis, but it has no power of anticipating any analytical relations or truth. So Ada said that computers cannot understand. But what did Alan Turing say? Because he was kind of on the other side. His opinion was that computers kind of can think in a certain way. And he said that the evidence available to Lady Lovelace did not encourage her to believe that the machines constructed or projected at the time had the property to think for themselves. It is quite possible that the machines in question had in a sense got this property. For suppose that some discrete state machine has the property, The analytical engine was a universal digital computer, so that if its storage capacity and speed were adequate, it could, by suitable programming, be made to mimic the machine in question. And philosophers, maybe philosophers and computer scientists, know what Alan Turing said here. So this is a big compliment to the analytical engine and also to Ada Lovelace, because he said that the analytical engine and the algorithms are as good as any other computer. So if the analytical engine were infinitely big, then we could run an Apple system on it or a Microsoft system. And therefore it can do what any other computer could do. So this is a really big compliment to the achievements of Ada, Babbage, and the analytical engine. All right, so my 20 minutes are over. And I just want to tell you something about where I got all my information from, mainly from this magazine, because this is a very nice summary of Ada Lovelace and also computer science, women in computer science, which I've now ordered for the Library of Constance. And otherwise, I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much, Sebastian, for a great talk.
I give you plan 25, the schematics for a mechanical computer. It would deliver calculations in mere hours that would take the greatest minds of today a lifetime to complete. I have written the only algorithm designed specifically to work on the analytical engine.
You're suffering. When will you acknowledge that you're unwell?
It's a bit of a gamble on your solitary vision.
The female brain is simply better suited to re-express ideas formulated by more robust and original male brain.
Basic facts of biology, you know?
Gamblers have been using probability algorithms for centuries. None of them are as sharp as our Ada.
I am at the doorstep of being able to transfer intelligence from mind to machine.
It may be that the world is simply not yet ready for this idea.
A deeply moving story of Ada Lovelace, a genius mathematician and pioneer of modern computing. Now we come to the last part of our evening with Ada. That is the discussion with the director and the writer of the movie, Steven Kammerer, and co-writer and the leading actress, Julie Bruns. So once again, thank you a lot for accepting our invitation. We are so honored to have you today with us. And I would like to ask you a few questions and then open the floor for a general discussion, if you don't mind.
Of course,
okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Julie, Steven, first, I would like to ask you, what was your motivation to make a movie about the 19th century's brilliant mathematician and the mother of computing, Ada Lovelace?
So Julie tells this story of how we stumbled upon the idea quite well. Do you want to kick it off? I mean, I'll start by saying that I was reading a lot of the poet, Lord Byron, her father, and I had sort of stumbled across the fact that he had three children, one was legitimate, and I'd noted it a couple times without knowing that Ada had become afterwards a famous computer programmer. But I mentioned it a few times, and finally, will you tell the story?
Yeah, we kind of stumbled across the existence of Ada together. And Steve was shocked because, being a fan of Lord Byron, he was amazed that he'd never, you know, heard really of what Ada had accomplished. And before I went into acting, I did a bit of web programming myself and was actually considering going to school for programming and computer sciences. And I had never heard of Ada either, which was interesting because tech has been such a male-dominated field, and it would have been such an interesting and inspiring thing to me as a young, you know, person involved in technology to have learned that we have a mother of computer science. So after having discovered Ada and what she had done, it was kind of a running thing that every year or two Steve would go, how has no one made a movie about this yet? And after a few years of this, I think I got sick of hearing him bring it up and sick of not being a film about Ada. And when the Crazy Eights film competition opportunity came up that year, Steve was thinking about participating and going, what movie, what do I make? And I went, remember how you always say there's no film about Ada Lovelace? This might be your shot.
And so Crazy Eights is a fairly well-known local Vancouver film competition, comes up once a year. And you have to make a film in 8 days, with 3 days of shooting, 5 days of post-production. So this was a little bit of a crazy idea to do a period piece, supposed to take place in London in 1851, but we're shooting it in Vancouver in February in the middle of a snowstorm. And as you see, it's a short film, so we stay pretty tight. Interiors mostly, there's only a little bit of exterior, so you don't see the snowstorm that's just raging around us. and we also wanted to, again, for a short film, focus on this last moment of her life, or the last year, and because everything, I think, kind of comes to a head, her illness, her attempts to try to finally make this machine, and her increasing gambling habit, where she goes deeply into debt, and leaves that debt as a problem for her friend Grieg, who's the family lawyer. They're played by John Emmett Tracy. So that's the answer to your question in a nutshell. We should open the field to the next question.
Yeah, sure. I would like to also ask you if you could tell us also a little bit more about the making of Ada. You just mentioned that you had just a few days to shoot a historical film, which is really impressive. So what were the main challenges, or maybe some interesting or funny behind the scene stories connected to Ada? Are there some?
Well, there were lots of behind the scene stories.
We were lucky in that while we only had 8 days to actually make the film, we had several, about maybe 5 months to write and edit and research and plan out various things in regard to costumes and set deck, and make sure that everything was very historically accurate, almost to the point where sometimes looking back, we probably erred on the side of being a bit too accurate. We had at the scene at the table, where she's negotiating with the gentleman, the glasses in that scene are actually glasses from basically 1850. And so when we were doing this, the part where she stands up and taps the glass, we weren't really allowed to touch or interfere with these glasses. So someone ran in and substituted in a much newer glass for me to tap.
A stunt glass. We had to use stunt glasses for tapping it with the knife.
So very lots of attention to detail to historical accuracy. And I was actually, for the duration of the film, in a period specific corset, which I had not shot in one of those before, and didn't realize that you can neither really breathe or sit down or eat. So thank God the film was only 3 days long.
Other challenges, as I said, there was a snowstorm where there was a meter high of snow out in around our heritage house, and so we actually weren't able to drive home on the last night because we got stuck in the snow drift. There were lots of things going on. It was a very large crew for a short film. So with this competition, lots of people from the film industry who are working on the big union shows. We're also, Vancouver's known as Hollywood North. So we have lots of big American TV shows shooting here in Vancouver. That's quite good for the local independent scene, because we can draw on those people to come and help with us. And so they're all coming out to work for free for the weekend. And all of our gear is also in kind. So we're shooting this on a micro budget. Mm-hmm. Most of the budget of that small pool of money was going to costumes, because we really wanted to. The location, the house, and the costumes, that's all of the budget right there.
Mm-hmm. There were definitely a few antique pieces in the costumes as well. Just a lot of attention to every little detail. Even the equations written on the mirror were copied from Ada's handwriting. That there are copies of prints of things are sourced from actual copies of documents from back then. So yeah, just the minutia of getting it right. And I guess one thing that we did overlook was there were light switches in the location that were missed. So we had to go back and have those edited out after shooting, because
yes, there's a lot of all the VFX work was done in just erasing the many light switches around this house. So, and as they say, there was a very large crew of about maybe 60, 70 people.
I think counting post, there were about 100 people total who right, would have touched post. The film by the time it was done. And
as you see, there were very long credits. Apologies for the very long credits, but we wanted to thank everybody. And you see a massive block of text and names at the very end. But we hope we entertained you during that time with the soundtrack of Sean William, which was all an original soundtrack recorded live by a string quartet, also in those 8 days. So he had to finish composing it and setting it within the space of about a day, really, in the middle there.
Yes, and we got to go to the live recording session, which is very entertaining to watch your face, watch people coordinating cellos and violins to the movements of your face.
Wow, incredible. And the music was really beautiful. And could you please tell us a little bit more about the screenplay? How did you manage to make this screenplay and the dialogue so authentic and to involve the audience emotionally? Because Ada is definitely a very moving film.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we were going for emotional impact. There were other ideas of doing more of a standard Disney-like biopic where you show her meeting Babbage when she's 17, and there would be many really interesting scenes to show, but I think we just wanted to keep it tight and with the utmost emotional impact to show where all these different things were coming together for her. And we left out Babbage almost entirely, except for in the discussion. We left out her parents, which played a huge role in her life and her development. And I think, yeah.
Well, we really just wanted to shine that spotlight on her. I think she's never really gotten the chance to take the stage in a film like that. And we really wanted to show that she is a person so worthy of being remembered and honored like that, despite the men who surrounded her. And you know, in terms of the writing, there was a lot of ground to cover in establishing the story, especially since we're jumping in so late in her life. And so it was interesting really paring down the writing where you've got all of that relevant information, but you still have an emotionally connecting film. And huge thanks to our story editor, Michelle Muldoon, for the work that she did with us to really be aware of what could be adjusted and trimmed to make it efficient and touching.
And it should be noted that quite a bit of the dialogue is actual authentic text out of her letters, particularly that last letter she's dictating. We have her dictating to Mary, that's a well-known letter from Ada. But other little bits and snippets of her out of her letters pop up throughout the film.
Great. And my last question goes to Julie. So I would like to ask you, how does it feel to be Ada for some days? So has this role influenced you as a woman and an actress?
I mean, what a resilient character Ada was. Just, she never backed down from a challenge. And I mean, I think that's such a universal thing. I know I relate to it, especially as a woman and as a person in a challenging competitive field. Acting is very competitive. But I mean, beyond that, I mean, I think just it's a universal feeling of being up against something and still committing wholeheartedly to doing the best you possibly can in the face of insurmountable in the end odds. And also I think there was such an interesting quality in that she did not succeed in traditional terms, but by, you know, the language she used in her letter, she knew she'd done enough for her. She knew she was right. And it was one of those moments where just knowing that she had done it for herself was almost enough. And she knew that that was going to come back in the future. And that sort of being able to acknowledge something for yourself, I think, especially as women, where maybe we're not getting that, those doors opened as easily as they should be sometimes, still trusting that we are good enough, still knowing that what we're doing is on the right track is such a powerful thing.
That's really good. Yeah.
Sure. I was going to say, although in one way she called herself a failure. She didn't ever get to, I mean, this machine was never built. Babbage also failed. He came back to it with plan 26, 27, and 28, and he never built it. So in that sense, it was a failure, but Ada saw, I think she was also at the end of her life trying to reconcile these extremely different traditions of her genealogy, the poetic side of her father and the much more analytical side of her mother. Her mother was also a mathematician. The poet Byron would call his wife the princess of parallelograms. And so Ada saw herself as being the inheritor of these extreme traditions that she was trying to reconcile. And so that was very important to her, is to reconcile with her father, who was banished from England and was seen as like this great devil. It took her, only at the end of her life did she actually come to embrace that side of her and the analytical side. And that was a very popular thing also to be doing in this period. I mean, there were many of her scientist friends also wrote poetry. I mean, the poetic and the mechanical side were seen as very important to reconcile during this period. And I could go on for a while, but maybe you should redirect the question again.
Thank you so much for interesting answers. And then I would like to open a discussion. And I can already see there are some questions. I think first one was Mateusz. Mateusz, you can ask your question, please.
Good evening. Thank you a lot for this very fascinating event. So we, at least I personally, don't have many opportunities to talk to actors, and I was wondering, how does one prepare to such a role? What does one have to do to play Ada and be able to perform such wonderful inscenization?
Thank you. I think the preparation process is definitely very personal to every actor. And in my case, I was very lucky because we were co-writing and working on the script together. I had a lot of time to research and delve into her backstory. And I think, like, in terms of playing a character like that, beyond just the information in the film and her accomplishments, it's kind of finding what really makes her human and relatable. And I mean, she was such a rogue for her time. She had that absolute conviction that she was capable of doing this thing that back then she would have been extremely discouraged from. And I think finding those qualities that made her really human, that was key to the whole process. And then, of course, there were just things like a lot of costume fittings, the fitting for the corset, figuring out how to breathe and move in period specific clothing. I am Canadian, but did go to theater school briefly in London, so had the British accent kind of down, but I still went to an accent coach because I wanted to specifically do an accent appropriate to that time period and the neighborhood of London she was from. A lot of attention to detail again, but at the heart of it, what really I think would I knew would make the film tick is what makes her very human and relatable, and in that sense, contemporary and timeless, because those are qualities that matter to us today as well as back then, as well as in the future.
Well, thank you very much.
Moritz, you raised your hand as the second person.
Thank you. So first of all, I want to also thank you to Julie and Stephen for showing us or presenting a movie here in this relatively private setting, but also to Gabi and Anke who organized this. I was very happy about the question that Mateusz just asked, because my question goes in a very similar direction. So what I think is interesting here is that we have a character that really predates any kind of video recordings, or, you know, to a certain extent also audio recordings. So getting into a character like this, I imagine is very, very different than getting into a normal character or a more recent character. And if kind of related to this, my question is that you said you had 8 days to shoot this movie, but from your answers, Stephen and Julie, it seems to me that you put a lot more time and effort into this than just 8 days. So I'd like to roughly know how long you prepared for this movie.
From the point where we put pen to paper, that would have been September. Mm-hmm. So I guess we five months of prepping, of building the crew, and of doing script revisions and so on. Mm-hmm. And then 3 days of shooting and 5 days of post-production.
Mm-hmm. And also I would say that you know, adapting a life of someone who has actually existed, there's so much rich detail to pull from there. It's unlike creating an entirely original work where you're kind of fitting in detail. In this case, it's a case of taking all of this detail and refining it down into something that's very coherent, which was wonderful, and especially even, you know, as playing the character, being able to read Ada's letters and just see the kind of language she uses and the way her brain sort of worked from that.
I imagine that it's a kind of intimate touch that you get with the Ada Lovelace that not a lot of people get if you prepare for a role like that. So it's really interesting stuff. Thank you.
So keenly aware that you want to honor this very impressive human being. Lots to live up to.
Anke, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, actually, I have two questions. So I'll start right away to say thank you to this great movie. It was really a pleasure watching it. And thanks for organizing, Gabi. So what I wanted to ask is first, how did you research on it? I mean, I think there's not so much to find. So where did you find all the material you needed to write a script? And my second question is, what's your next project? So I'm a biologist, and of course, I'm hoping for a women biologist as the next main character for a new film. So.
Well, there are actually about five or six now full-length biographies of Ada. Going back to the first one was only in 1977, and that's actually also the fullest and most detailed one, and the one I sort of focused on most to get all the details of all the secondary characters. You can find the most information about people like John Cross, her lover, and Grieg, who was one of her best friends and the lawyer of the family. And Grieg, it should be pointed out, was the son of
Mary Somerville.
Do you know, are you familiar with that name, Anka? Somerville was one of the most famous biologists of the period, actually, and general scientist as well. And she was one of Ada's tutors. And very little is known about Mary Somerville, and I think there should definitely be a movie portraying her life. all of her friends are sons or children of well-known scientists at the time. So the lover John Cross, for instance, is the son of Andrew Cross, who was one of the first people to experiment with electricity. And in fact, Mary Shelley partly based the figure of Dr. Frankenstein on Andrew Cross, so John Cross's father. I mean, the Frankenstein is a mixture, I believe, of an alchemist named Dippel, who was at Castle Frankenstein near Darmstadt, but half of it is based on actually this father of her lover, of Ada's lover, sorry. Anyway, all of these people were poets, scientists, and knew each other. It's a very tight little group going through the generations here. It's fascinating. And there are so many stories that could be told about it. And Hollywood mostly focuses on, I mean, there's many movies about obviously Frankenstein and even Mary Shelley's life, but there's so many fascinating figures where I would love to see, a cinematic treatment of them. And so there's lots of ideas, but I would start with Mary Somerville, the biologist.
I think, yeah, what we'd love to take on is a future project, maybe not our next project because it is definitely scaling up a bit, but we'd love to do a feature version of Ada because I think she definitely deserves that.
But our ideas would be still, if we were to do a feature of Ada, is to still focus on that last couple of years of her life. And maybe start with, go back to 1850, only a year before, where she makes a pilgrimage to Newstead Abbey, which at that point, which is where Lord Byron, the poet, grew up, the family homestead. And a school friend of Byron had bought it and turned it into a museum. So already in 1850, Newstead Abbey was a museum full of relics of the poet. And Ada went and made a pilgrimage to it. And again, remember, she was banned from ever knowing much about her father because her mother hated, this guy. And so she's beginning to reconcile these different parts of her nature. And I think a feature should really start with that sort of attempted reconciliation with her father on this pilgrimage to Newstead Abbey, and then kind of walk through the rest of her last 2 years. So that's our idea for the feature, Ada, which is down the road a little bit because obviously a period piece is a very big production.
Lofty ambition.
We have a couple other short films out there on the festival circuit right now.
Working on the next one always.
Yeah. Great. We have two more questions. I think Freya was first.
Hi, I loved your film from the plot to the acting to the lighting to the music, especially. I have a question about the characterization of Ada that you followed. And I have to admit, in the first moments of the film, you created an image of Ada for me that seemed very fierce, very certain in her goals. And admittedly, she does not seem very like a very likable person in these shots, but just very... fierce and somewhat even too harsh maybe for me to like her a lot. Like I came to like her more in the preceding shots, but especially the first portrait of her seemed very, very a bit too harsh for me to like her. And it somewhat made me think of the aspects of what many don't like about cliche feminists. And do you purposefully characterize her like that? And would you call Ada a feminist?
I think there's something about Ada being very fierce and strong in those first moments that's important for the vulnerability that gets expressed later, where I think especially with women, we see this portrayal of very put together, strong women. And behind that, almost inevitably, there's so much more life and so much more challenge that you never see. And so I think it's maybe easy sometimes to brush off accomplishments by women because we don't see what they're up against behind the scenes. In their own minds, in the back room of the dinner party.
And if you read her letters, you will see that this very abrasive side to her, she often talks about her own genius. And there's that line in the letter where, this brain of mine is something more than mortal. Mm-hmm. She really often talked like that. Mm-hmm. But she also had this very, very fragile, vulnerable side as well. Like, she does have these extreme parts of her personality. And the abrasive sort of "I am a genius" side is quite prominent.
Yeah, she was very authentic, and but not a woman who seemed to really dip into a lot of humility, which I think is even to this day that women sometimes have difficulty standing up and going, "No, I am a genius." And it was interesting reading her letters and kind of going, "Oh, she was the mathematical Kanye West of 1850." I don't think she lived life on her own terms. I don't think she worried about being likable, especially back then when women would have been very, how do I appeal to people and to men? And she was completely unconcerned with that. I would say absolutely she was a feminist, if not perhaps pushing a little more into believing that her
I think you could use
mental acuity was superior.
they were very familiar with the writings of Wollstonecraft and Godwin, two names. Godwin was the father of, was actually the father of Mary Shelley. And so friends with the Byron family as well. And he published in 1802 or so a book called The Rights of Women, on the rights of women. So these feminist strands are actually just starting here and are quite familiar to the circles around Ada. At the same time, she was facing exactly this medical opinion that we bring out in the table discussion, that if a woman thinks too much, it will have will damage her health. This was a widespread commonplace of medical opinion. And Ada did not believe in this. She did not attribute her uterine cancer to thinking too much. She had no time for that whatsoever. But that would have been a common sort of suspicion. Oh, look what happens when you teach a young girl to do, tutor in mathematics. Now she has cancer, of course. But she had no time for that opinion. And I would say you could definitely call her a feminist in many ways.
Thank you.
There was another question from Catherine.
Yes, thank you. I have I got a part of the answer in the last answer to my question. I wanted to ask, I did not understand very clearly why it was so important for you to have the historical settings exact. Because it seems to me the story is timeless. We have a brilliant woman who is confronted with prejudices, and I spontaneously thought about how would that be mise en scène? I don't know, how would it be on stage in a theater? There you have possibilities of very abstract styles and so on. And maybe if I can elaborate on your last answer, maybe I think, I do it like a question. Was it your intention to have more contrast on her modernity, her modern character, her modern style of thinking, and the obstacles she was confronted with in her time? This is one part of the question. The other part is, it seems to me that the movie focused on the ambivalence of her character. She's not flawless. She's brilliant, but she's not flawless. So why is it important to have historical costumes and historical surroundings for that?
Well, I would say, so that's a very good question, because I would say, first off, when it comes to doing a feature of this, we would not go down that same path. There are so many ways to tell a story, to tell a period piece with modern elements. But for us, that would have been also just ambitious and difficult in a different way. For the purposes of this competition, that was just our goal, was to be historically accurate for this telling of it. In 18 minutes, here at the end of her life, we wanted to get all those aspects, because her story had not been told cinematically yet. And so for this first time, we just wanted to stay along and give us that challenge of trying to make it as historically accurate as possible. So that's just one, I would see that, yes, as one path to go down. I don't think we're going to go down that path for the feature film.
I think there's a lot that, yeah, can be done to play with the modern identity of it. I mean, I think as it is, I think it's interesting to portray it in this very stylized historical context and yet still have those timeless emotions running through it. For a feature, I think it would be a ton of fun to play with a very contemporary soundtrack, even playing in with yes, go ahead.
May I ask, I would think the opposite. I would think for the long biopic, I would think, okay, let's do historical. And for the short one, which is condensed, but okay, that's completely subjective. I'm personal. I would have thought, okay, let's do something completely stylized, you know, completely abstract. But okay, that's just
we're the other way. We're going to go more stylized and abstract for the feature. And with techno music, we've been collecting a lot of our sort of 70s Kraftwerk. I now have 6 albums of Kraftwerks. Work, and I would like, that would be the direction I would go with the soundtrack next time.
I think there's just a lot of room to play. I know, like, the Great did a really fun interpretation of Catherine the Great's life so far. They're still running it, and I think, yeah, there's just a lot of ways to really bring history closer, I guess, to us. Yeah, and in terms of Ada's flawlessness, I think that's super important, I think, to any character. I think even when we watch movies about superheroes and Superman, like, the interesting part of those characters is their flaws. And in Ada's case, she was deeply, deeply flawed. In fact, she was brilliant in spite of her flaws, in a way. And I think that just makes her all the more interesting.
Are there any other questions or comments? No, it doesn't seem to be like this. So I would like to thank a lot to all of you, to Julie, Stephen, Sebastian, to the members and coordinators of the Transregional Collaborative Research Center, Quantitative Methods for Visual Computing, for all people involved and supporting the initiative Constance Women in Mathematics, and to all of you who attended our evening with Ada. So thank you so much for being here today with us and contributing to this event. Thank you a lot, and I hope to see you next time.
Thank you so much,
Gabriela, for organizing this.
My great pleasure. Thank you so much. And have a great evening.
Great questions, everyone, too. Those were wonderful questions. Thank you all for those. And it was great to meet you all.
Yeah. So I hope that this evening inspired all of you to think a little bit out of the box and to pursue your ideas and passions like Ada did. All the best to all of you, and have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.